T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You're listening to a best of Grill Nation.
Successful media and public affairs consultant, accomplished entrepreneur and national writer and contributor, attorney who served in the Missouri House of Representatives, worked in the White House and CNN, thought leader, entrepreneur, and host who takes the conversation to the next level.
Prepare to get rare access to fascinating guests.
You're connected. You have the it factor. You've joined
Grill Nation.
Everybody over there!
Get a hooter!
Connect with Jason on Twitter at Jason Grill. Connect with the show on Twitter at Grill Nation Show and online at grillnationshow.com.
Welcome your host of Grill Nation, always dressed up and ready to go, even in a radio studio. Here's Jason Grill.
Hello and welcome to Grill Nation here on KMDZ 980 AM. I am your host, Jason Grill. Thanks for joining us today. As always, I appreciate it. It's going to be an awesome show today, and I'm very excited to have you listening on line on iTunes or via the radio today. I want to quickly thank our partners and supporters before I introduce our two awesome guests that we're going to have on the show today. Title sponsors of the Grill Nation show are Truss, MoBank, BOK Financial, and Two West Companies, and Ryan Rink. Contributors to the Grill Nation show and on-air guest co-hosts are Ryan Mabey from the Rieger and J. Rieger & Co., One Light Luxury Apartments as well. Thank them all for being partners and supporters. You can check out their websites and get more information about them at grillnationshow.com. On today's show, we are going to start out with Andrew Cameron, who's the owner and founder of Donutology, a awesome donut shop here in the Kansas City area. I'm looking forward to him telling us more about that. And I'm hopeful, and actually I'm seeing right now that he has brought in at least 24 different types of donuts, and they are amazing, and I can't wait to share these with everyone in the office and with our other guests today. After Andrew, we're going to have on Matt Druten, who's the managing director and co-founder of Edison Spaces. It's a really cool space, offices down in Overland Park, private, fully furnished team offices with monthly rental rates. Each office is driven by industry-leading technology and includes business-class amenities. Their website is edisonspaces.com. Matt is also the president, or former president and CFO of Freightquote, a company that sold a few years ago for over $300 million. So we're going to talk about entrepreneurship, his journey, and also get into the why Edison Spaces is unique, and there's nothing like it here in the Kansas City area. So he'll be joining us in segments 3 and 4 today after we talk. Now to Andrew Cameron, who is the founder of Donutology. He's also been the owner of other donut shops here in Kansas City. Is that correct, Andrew?
Yeah, I own Six Daylight Donuts as well.
Six Daylight Donuts as well. Welcome to the show, Andrew Cameron from Donutology. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on the show. First off, let's talk about your background. You know, how did you get into this? Where'd you grow up at? I noticed you're a Creighton alum as well.
Yeah, Kansas City born and raised, nice. Then ventured up to Omaha for school.
Nice Jesuit university. I went to St. Lucie University myself.
Oh, right on.
So similar kind of great basketball schools, cool inner city campuses, the whole nine yards, right?
Yeah, I mean, I originally went up there to be a doctor, and here I am doing donuts.
Really? Really, yeah. So you grew up here in the Kansas City area, went to college there, and then what the heck happened after college? You didn't.
Yeah,
you couldn't become a doctor.
Throughout summer camp, college, I worked at a summer camp, and we got donuts all the time. I just love donuts. I had never cooked a donut in my life before I opened my donut shop. But after school, I wanted to go into business for myself. So I'm like, you know, it'd be really fun to start a donut shop.
This was when you were pretty young then?
Right out of college.
Really? And that's unique, right? I mean, nobody usually, at least probably back when we were getting out of college, was like, I'm going to start my own company. I mean, it just didn't happen back then. You went to work for a big company or you went to grad school at that point, right?
Yeah, entrepreneurship is a big deal to my generation and the generation after me. It's bigger than ever, really.
Mm-hmm. So Okay, so tell us about your first venture. So you owned Daylight Donuts of Kansas City. What you tell me about that? Six of them, correct?
Correct. And it just culminated, and I had never cooked a donut in my life. I love donuts. I'm going to open a donut shop. And we opened our first store in Leavenworth, Kansas, and it went really well. So we just kept going.
But was it a typical donut shop? Or was it it's definitely not what you're doing now, correct?
Yeah, it's more like a traditional donut shop. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did build it in an old house. And then our next one in Lansing was in a old car wash. You literally drive your car through our donut shop and point in the window what donuts you'd like.
That's pretty innovative.
Yeah, and then
maybe that'll catch on at some point. That an old car wash that you pointed into windows when you drove through. I've never heard of anything like that. That's unique.
Yeah, I'm huge on experience, and our Olathe store was in an old bank. So I mean, we try and do things that are a little different. That's always kind of been in our DNA.
Mm-hmm. So when you did this, I mean, this was early 2010-ish, 11-ish, when you started kind of owning all of these. What was the market like then? I mean, because you have your big donut shops, right, that are international, national franchisees. What was it like? I mean, I feel like donut stores still are kind of local.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen since our inception the market change for donuts. Back then, you know, the only players you really knew were Krispy Kreme and Dunkin' Donuts and whatever frozen donuts you found at your grocery store. But starting in 2013, 14, the Kraft donut took a kind of a rise.
Mm-hmm. And why is that? Because it seems to me that the healthy food world is growing. We're seeing fast food restaurants have many healthy options. Why is it that donuts, of all things, kind of became more popular?
Obviously,
you kind of grabbed onto a market that, you know, for all intents and purposes, could have been dying. I remember when bagels became big when I was in college. Bagels were the healthiest thing you could eat, right? Carbs,
sure.
Bagels, cream cheese, let's do it. And then that kind of took a little fall here with this health-conscious, non-carb movement. How the heck do donuts continue to grow?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Obviously, we look at the health market, and the interesting about the donut industry is that it's never gone down. Despite all the health crazes, it's actually continuously grown for over a century. It's not crazy spikes of growth, but it's a constant uphill growth trajectory. So, you know, we've never really had to deal with any downturns, even when the economy's not doing so hot. Most people can still afford a 99-cent donut.
Mm-hmm. Andrew Cameron is our guest, founder of Donutology and owner of Six Daylight Donuts here in the Kansas City area, joining me today on Grill Nation Show. Before we get into kind of everything about Donutology, we'll do that in our next segment. We'll take you through some of these donuts and some of the unique things you've done with some local companies. And it's, again, it's about experience. Tell us when you decided to do this and make that move to Fancy Donuts, and how did that all come about for you? And why did you decide to do that when you already had six other promising locations?
Yeah, we were looking at the market. We loved the Kraft donut experience. And the problem with the traditional donut shops is once you ran out of donuts, you were out. So as this happened for the millionth time one day, and the customers get really angry when you run out of their favorite donuts, I decided, you know what? I'm going to make a donut shop that stays open all day long and never runs out of donuts. And it's going to be an amazing interactive experience. And that's how Donutology was born.
Mm-hmm. Donutology's website is donutology.com. They have their menu, their story, and their press on the website. Andrew Cameron is with me. Andrew, on your next segment, I want to talk about that experience and your local partnerships and, you know, kind of your location, the why, and hopefully draw some entrepreneurial advice from you. And also talk about an award that you recently received with a global competition here, if you would. After the break on Grill Nation, more with Andrew Cameron, founder of Donut Hall.
Happy holiday. happy holiday.
You're listening to a best of Grill Nation.
Welcome back to the Grill Nation show. Appreciate you sticking with us today on 980 AM KMBZ and as well at grillnationshow.com and on iTunes via podcast. And with Brian Tsar from True Wealth and Company, the president and chief investment officer at that great company here in Kansas City. He's guest hosting, contributing today. His website is retirewithtrue.com. And Brian, great conversation so far with Jasper. Jasper's restaurant in Kansas City is jasperskc.com, won a lot of awards. But I think you want to take this segment. I want you to start off with the story and kind of, you know, the ups and downs of starting a restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, you know, your grandfather, Leonardo, and your dad, Jasper, who the restaurant's named after, I just want to learn, what were some of the initial struggles that you saw or you heard them talk about, and how did that shape you as you run your restaurant today?
Well, I look back now and I see what my grandparents went through and what my mom and dad went through, and those are lessons that I carry on today, and I try to teach my nephew and even my key employees and people who've been with us for a long time, because I think if they know the story and the struggles they had back in the day, when you're only getting 69 cents for a dish of pasta. And of course, when you're selling a whole pizza pie, that's what they used to call them back then, for 89 cents, and trying to survive on the little bit of profit that you do make in the restaurant business, because people don't realize, everybody sees, wow, you have this grand restaurant, and I can just imagine the money that this restaurant must take in. They don't realize the insurance, the rent, you know, your glass breakage, you know, and just everything just accumulates. And at the end, you're probably better off getting a job somewhere,
right,
than owning a restaurant. But my father stuck with it. And I'll tell you what, he was one tough guy. And we always have a saying around the restaurant. We still talk about it every day at the restaurant. It's called Modo Mio, and it means my way in Italian. And it was just my father's way of running the business. He was self-taught. I went to University of Nevada, Las Vegas, restaurant and hotel school. Leonard went to Denver University. We're lucky. We're fortunate. We have we're book smart. My dad was street smart with the restaurant business and how to make relationships back in the 1950s, which were a lot easier. Now it's a little bit more difficult, but you know, we had the bread company and the pasta company you work with, and making deals back then, which now there's, you know, it's part of the business, but everything was on a handshake back then, and you trusted everybody.
When did you know you wanted to be a chef?
Oh, I know myself. I was 6 years old. I used to hang around Nana's house and sitting on the counter, watching her get six or seven ingredients and put this beautiful dish together that we would all sit around the table and enjoy. It's in my blood.
I can only imagine sitting around your house.
Oh, my God.
And just trying all the food and all the experimentation and that. I mean, that's just got to be a hoot to for the holidays at your house.
Oh, it was funny because we used to have in the basement of the new house, we called it, on 112th Street. My dad had a working kitchen in the basement, a wheel, which we called the wheels, the expediter wheel in the basement. And also, I'm telling you, a table that sat maybe 24, and we'd always put about 30 chairs around it. And the platters of food and the late night talking. And my dad taking notes. You know, we'd try a new dish. I'll never forget. That's how Chicken Frederico came. It's featured in the cookbook. I had a little bit of this. No, take this out. And everybody's comments. Mm-hmm. And even the other night, it's funny, Sunday night we had dinner, and the same priest is with our family, Father Markleski. My sister-in-law made the pasta sauce Sunday, because I didn't feel like cooking. I had other things. I prepared other things. And Marco was sitting at the head of the table, just like Daddy used to. And he looked at my sister-in-law and said, I give you a 97. And I said, whoa, Marco's grading now. He's grading Vicky, the sister-in-law, you know. And he said, just like Jasper used to tell us, I'll never give you 100, because then you have nothing to work for.
Right.
So this way you can work on a few things. And she said, really? I said, there's nothing to work on, Vicky. He's just playing with you. But can you imagine being graded on your dinner?
Yeah.
Most people just throw the food right at you and say, I'm out of here, you know.
So, tastes good. It tastes good.
But I learned more than anything, family and working with family. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not easy. I work with my nephew and my brother, and I mean, long days.
And 3J, right?
And 3J.
What's your brother's name?
Leonard.
Leonard, that's right.
And they run the daily operations while I'm out doing the interviews, out doing the advertising, doing the cooking shows and everything. But they're in the trenches. Some nights, you know, it could be 8:30
That causes friction, doesn't it, sometimes?
No, not real. They understand. Leonard's older. Leonard doesn't get behind the stove, so there's no friction there. Leonard runs the office, but he's back there expediting. And my nephew, he's putting the hours in that I put back in when I was 38 years old. I'm 56 years old, and I told him there, and I said, Jay, man, I'm a little tired. And he said, Uncle Jay, I've worked for you now with you all these years. You've never said you were tired. I said, well, don't tell nobody. I said, you know, just
keep it secret.
We'll just keep between us. But, you know, it's tough. You have to have a family that my father taught me to work with you.
Well, when you talk about family and your community and all the friends and everybody that was surrounded the restaurant at 75th and Morno.
Sure.
And then for your grandpa and your dad to sell that location and move to where you're at today, talk about, I mean, that had to have been just a really tough struggle for the family to make that move.
It was tough. You know, Papa had already passed away, and the restaurant really was Leonard, myself, and my dad. And we had Marco Polo's Italian Market, we had the Trattoria, we had Il Cafe, and we had Jasper's. And when Walgreen came around, I'll never forget, I was in Disney World, and I got a phone call in 1996 from Leonard saying, hey, we just got an offer for the business. I said, Leonard, are you serious? We're not going to sell this restaurant. There's no way in the world. First of all, there's no way they can match what our salaries were at the time. And the restaurant was already known as a mobile four-star, AAA four-diamond restaurant. I mean, back then, people would fly in to have dinner at the restaurant. Mm. And, I mean, it was pretty – we were on the map back then. Such people as Mitzi Gaynor and Ed McMahon, anybody who came to town, ate at Jasper's, sports figures, presidents. We had President Ford at the restaurant. Come on. So long story short, a year went on and negotiated. And my father, I'll tell you, my dad was a tough negotiator with Mr. Walgreen. And he dealt with Mr. Walgreen himself because Walgreens wanted a specific corner in Kansas City, as you know.
Yes.
Now.
Highly desirable.
Now it's not a big deal.
Waldo, right?
Yeah. Okay. And they wanted 75th and Warnell because of CVS across the street. It wasn't CVS back then. It was
Osco Drug, yeah.
And it was like, you know, like a little war. Now it's between CVS. And my dad put his price out there and would not budge one single bit. My dad got his price plus more, and we paid employees while we were closed, which is unheard of, until we can open a new restaurant.
That's fabulous.
And that's how we kept the employees.
What year was that?
That was 1997.
Okay.
And it took 1 year to build a new restaurant. I was against it. I'm gonna come around and tell you. No way in the world can we give up this fine dining restaurant, the chandeliers, the Murano crystal, all the silverware, the fine china, the tuxedo waiters. My dad saw the future. I didn't. And I admit it right now to everyone. I did not understand, why are we leaving this to go? My dad said, because you're not out. You go on vacation once a year. You don't see what's going on around us, the restaurants expanding and what they're doing in Kansas City. And my dad was the first one really to close a fine dining restaurant in Kansas City. Then it just kind of was a trickle-down effect in Kansas City with other restaurants finally closing, the American, EBT, Savoy Grill, you know, the higher-end restaurants, because people just weren't going to pay that money and dress up like that anymore. Mm-hmm. And we were criticized when we opened up on 75th Street. Let me tell you, the old-timers came in, and we didn't have the tuxedos on, and we took the tablecloths off. But we still had the Jasper's touch, and that's what I call it. We still had that one thing that nobody else can really compete with us, and that was the family being there. And it's called Myth, Mirabile in the House. And from the time we open until the time we close, there's a Mirabile in the house, whether it's my brother, my nephew, even if we had to call in my wife or my brother Sammy had a heart attack, there's always a Mirabile in that restaurant.
Well, I know that running a restaurant, sometimes when you're sitting there as a patron, you know, enjoying a fine meal and enjoying service and all that, you think, boy, it sure is easy to run a restaurant.
Oh, sure.
But, you know, I know, having worked catering for 4 years to help pay my way through college, that it's anything but wonderful. And so talk about the backside of the restaurant, the back end that nobody sees.
I mean, it would be great to walk in every morning and see your 8 cooks all lined up, perfect in uniform. My 4 cashiers just lined up, and the walls are perfect, and the dishwasher is just running just very, very quietly, and everybody's just walking around. That's a dream.
Yeah.
You know, is it ever going to happen? No. Do I want it to happen? No, because that's the challenge I have every day. You don't know what goes on behind the scenes at a restaurant. People, I take them for a tour, and they're just like, their eyes are wide open. They go, wow, I had no idea. You know, you have someone on the microphone constantly. We don't do the new way with guys with the little eye bobs in their ears and not eye bobs, what it's mm-hmm. called.
Earbuds.
Earbuds. Yeah, earbuds. Earbuds. I got eye bobs in my glasses. And we don't have, you know, all the computers and the fancy machines we do, but you still hand in a ticket to place your order.
Right.
A person still orders that dish, and that dish is checked before it leaves the kitchen. That's unheard of today.
Mm-hmm.
So we still do things the old-fashioned way. What goes on now in the restaurant business still went on in 1954. The same thing the way my father ran that restaurant in the kitchen, we do the same thing today.
Jess, we got about a minute 30 left in the set. You mentioned Sunday pasta and cooking.
Oh, yeah. You said pasta. I love it. Come on.
Tell us what your favorite Italian dish is if you had to choose one.
Rigatoni with mama's meatballs and sausage. I mean, of all the pasta dishes, the puttanesca, the matriciana, the clam sauce, all the Tuscan ragus, I still go back to the old Sunday sauce, I call it, just slow simmered with the meatballs. Because Sunday morning, you wake up, you smell meatballs cooking. Mm. You come downstairs, you have fried meatballs. And then about 2-3 o'clock, you have your pasta dish. 8-9 o'clock at night, we have fried pasta. My daughter still, we talk about that because she's in Jacksonville now. And we still talk about frying pasta late at night in a little Tupperware and you put it in the frying pan. That smell, you know, I think about all that, about going back in time. And I still, that same smell, that same sauce. When my nephew and I went to Sicily the last time, my nephew sits down, he takes a bite of the pasta dish. He looks at me, he says, Uncle Jay, it tastes just like home. Mm-hmm. I said, Jay, you are home. Here's where the recipes came from.
This is the actual spot.
And you get that feeling over, and then you, when you could do that again and replicate that same dish, sometimes you can't do that with other things. I'm not talking about dishes, but in business. Mm-hmm. Pasta, it brings everybody together. Come on, you put it at the table.
That's, I love it.
That's my life.
Gosh. Wish we had that right now in front of
us. Oh,
yeah,
I feel guilty. Tell me I don't feel guilty. I'm not bringing you some pasta.
You're
going
to rub that in every segment,
yeah,
aren't
come
you?
Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Now it's meatballs, cannolis, meatballs, you know.
Sounds delicious. Thanks for listening to the Grill Nation Show. We'll be right back after the break with more with Brian Zarf, and we're going to have talk to Jasper more about his business and probably have some more fun questions here after the break. You're listening to Grill Nation.
Merry Christmas comes this time.
Listening to a best of Grill Nation.
Welcome back to the show, Grill Nation, here on 980 AM, KMBZ, and on iTunes via podcast. I'm your host, Jason Grill. We're talking to Chase and Holly McAnulty with Charlie Hustle, charliehustle.com. They have a shop on the plaza. They also have a shop in Lawrence, don't you?
We sure do.
Tell us about that, because I read about that, and you're just taking on a lot more things. Your alma mater. How's that going? And what was that?
So exciting.
You've done so many great things with them that you decided to go for it? Is it in the bookstore? Where's it at?
That one kind of fell in our lap in a really great way at the perfect time. We have been wanting KU's license for years, and it took us 3 years to get it. And then last March, McLean's Bakery here in Kansas City, they reached out to us. They were expanding to Lawrence to do a McLean's market there. And they wanted to bring in a local retail store. So they reached out to us, and boom, just perfect.
Yeah. And the week before, I was actually up in Lawrence looking at spaces. I mean, this whole thing started from wanting to see something else in the market up at KU.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a full circle thing.
Definitely. Full circle. Very cool.
Yes.
I got to tell you guys, I was the first state representative or politician to ever have a cool t-shirt. Everything was Gildan, and it was cotton, 100% cotton.
Yeah.
And American Apparel had just started, I think. And they had a website where you could make a t-shirt. And I swear, I had more people donating to me just because I had a t-shirt that was like comfortable.
Yeah.
People tell me their wives still wear it.
You
like, this is 15
it.
Years later. You know, it's crazy.
Like, why do you have a Jason Grill shirt on?
They're hilarious. They're one with my face, one with the state. But my point is that they were comfortable. They're the tri-blend, and nobody had those yet, really. I mean, it wasn't a big deal. And so when you're talking about being in college, like, I still, like, look for those things.
Yeah.
You know, in bookstores when you travel. But that's cool. So the Lawrence store is a functional going.
It's
all KU stuff, correct? I can't imagine you have any other stuff in there. Yeah. Maybe Chiefs?
KU
maybe
Rose. Stuff, some hometown stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty much, it was kind of our test on, you know, will this work in a campus setting? Uh-huh. Is it something we could take to Columbia?
Yeah.
And we're still kind of working through that. We just opened in April. Summer's pretty dead up there. And so we're figuring out ways to kind of bring people in. You know, basketball season just started, so that, and we're kind of hopeful with that. But it's more of a, it's low risk. It's more of a cool marketing opportunity for us to really show off all we do with KU.
Mm-hmm. And you guys, when I met you, you hadn't done any of the licensing yet, for the most part. You might have had one or two colleges. What's that been like? Because that, a lot of people talk about that and how difficult it is to get licenses. And so you're creating all these T-shirts that are, you know, maybe you get a cease and desist, maybe you don't. But they're like right on that cusp to where, before you get a license, where if you have a team, like a burnt orange shirt or something, Texas could say, well, that shirt's a little bit too orange and too close to ours. But you guys actually went through the process to get all of the licensing from all these schools. Mm-hmm. How the heck did that happen?
I mean, that was the dream overall. But Wichita State was actually our very first license. And that was kind of a cool step. It was when Wichita State was kind of making their Final Four run, and just as the underdog. And we had an opportunity to kind of get in with them on the licensing side, took it and ran with it. They wanted some cool stuff. They were kind of a smaller university, and I think a lot of the smaller schools, they don't have great access. You know, the consumer doesn't have great access to really cool stuff. And so they gave us a shot, and it helped us grab some of the other schools. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we had like Baylor was next, and then K-State. And
how did that happen, though? Did you guys, who do you talk to for something like that? Like, who's the person at the university?
Licensing director or someone in marketing.
Yeah.
So I remember you guys had someone that was doing that, and then you just do it to all the schools. It makes sense.
Is well, it's actually Amanda Beasler.
Yeah.
Matt's wife. She was our second hire, really.
Yeah.
And we knew we needed kind of that licensing help. That was her background. So she kind of had the relationships going a little bit already, with the schools, athletic directors.
Yeah.
Whatever way you can get in.
Mm-hmm. And is a lot of them are like excited to have you do it, and some of them are like, it's going to cost you this, but it's going to be a 3-year deal. And
yeah, it's the coolest part about it, I think, is, you know, we started building kind of a portfolio of maybe a dozen schools.
Yeah.
And now we have over 40, and people are coming to us, you know, hey, can we get some of your stuff for like North Dakota State, you know? Who knows,
right? Yeah, they're kind of a big football program.
Bison Pride.
Yeah. I like it. And then they can put it in their bookstore, and then you know, yada yada. Mm-hmm. So you guys kind of caught lightning in a bottle with the KCR, but I've read something that, you know, everyone thinks about it from the Negro Leagues, and you said that there was something on the plaza also that, like, people had KCs and hearts on the walls in like the 1920s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thought that was interesting. Tell me about that. This is kind of a thing, and they have, you know, you have the pins now. I mean, this has been around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the coolest thing. I think, what was it, early 1900s, the railroad stations, the railroad tracks had a little Casey Hart pin, or it was a heart, and it just said Kansas City across it.
That's cool.
But we've always celebrated, you know, Casey being the heart of America.
Mm-hmm.
We've just never really, like, explored it, maybe on a T-shirt,
mm-hmm. Or on a flag, or on a city symbol or anything. Yeah.
The, mm-hmm. you know, everyone, most people know the Monarchs patch. They had that when Jackie Robinson was playing for them, they had the patch on the shoulder. Even the plaza in the 1950s, their light pole. And we have one, a buddy of ours, Chris Harrington from West Side Story.
He
found one in an antique auction.
Oh, wow.
And he just gave it to us. I was like, that is the coolest thing, because this helps tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we just brought the Casey Hart to prevalence mm-hmm. on a shirt. And I think it's more than anything, it's become our duty to protect that for Kansas City.
There's mm-hmm. so much history behind it that you people don't know about.
Yeah. You could take this thing many different places. People have asked, why don't you do NY and LA? It's more about the...
Well, but Matt Baldwin did that.
Yeah,
with his hat, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I saw one in New York when I was walking down the street. Someone had one on, and I knew it was Baldwin immediately, just mm-hmm. being from here. But
but
you're right. I mean, it's kind of a hard, and I kind of wanted to talk to you about that, because, you know, it's hard to recreate what you guys did here in other markets. That's kind of the big thing, that if you could conquer that or figure that out, you know, that's a gold mine, and that's a national.
That's our biggest challenge right now.
But you're not in Cleveland. You're not in you know, wherever, Seattle. It's hard to, you didn't grow up there, you know, so.
Yeah, there's a lot of great companies like us in other cities and in other areas that do really well. I think, you know, there's Homage out of Ohio. There's
now, have you talked to these CEOs out of yet? Pittsburgh. Have you talked to any CEOs?
I've talked to a few here and there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all kind of playing in our own markets, but also trying to kind of branch out into others. And our focus right now is to really own the middle of the map and try to apply the culture we've created here to maybe Nebraska. You know, Omaha doesn't quite have that.
I think that's smart. I think that it's smart to, the more that I talk to people on the show, it's like, whether you have a co-working space or whatever, like if you can do what you did in kind of more of those middle market cities that don't get the love like the big cities do. There's kind of a uncharted territory there.
Yeah. But I mean, there's so much passion and, and pride in these, I think Midwest, you know,
And you guys now do more than t-shirts too. You've really branched out into a lot of different other apparel and accessories, right?
Yeah, we're creating our own fleece, our own garments, actually, all across the board right now. We have a manufacturer in Los Angeles. That was a really long process to find just the right one. And so...
That's an interesting industry.
Jogger pants, crew neck, fleece, sweatshirts, hoodies, t-shirts.
Seen joggers, I've seen your sweatpants.
Yeah. We even have a, nobody knows this yet. This is a first on the
Grill. Let's
drum roll.
Now we actually have a Christmas sweater this year that's coming out, I think after Black Friday here, but always wanted to do it, something like this. And, you know, it's cool to see it come to fruition, and it looks
good.
It looks pretty cool.
It's so good, yeah.
Yeah.
And the material is so soft. I think it's
going to fly out pretty fast. But,
And so all of those different things take a lot of effort, you know, with manufacturing.
Yeah.
I mean, you figured out how to do a t-shirt, obviously, pretty well, but actually making pants and, you know, fleece, like you said, and a sweatshirt and a hat, like, that's not easy as people think it is.
No. And honestly, like, our first, last year was our first time with a whole collection of fleece, and, you know, they weren't great. We weren't good at it like we were with the t-shirt yet. And, but you keep refining, and this year's collection is so much better. And,
how many things do you have now for sale? Total, like how many SKUs do you guys have?
I mean, we got over,
hundreds, right?
Yeah, we got over 1,000 SKUs, I think. Our warehouse has grown, you know, almost 100% the last 4 years. And now you focus on steady growth. So you kind of, I think 1,000 SKUs is a ton. So
it's a lot, right, Devin?
Rein it back in on, you know, what's our real focus here and try to grow a long lasting business.
That's awesome. Jason Holly are with me from Charlie Hustle. We have one segment left. On the last segment, guys, I want to talk to you about kind of some of your biggest struggles, biggest breaks, branching out again out of the Casey Hart, you know, to try to grow your team size and everyone's evolution in the company. And whatever else you want to talk about, maybe get some of your favorite spots here in Kansas City as well. You're listening to the Grill Nation show here on 980 AM KMZ.
Run, run, Rudolph, I'm reeling like a merry-go-round. Rocking around the Christmas tree, have a happy holiday.
You're listening to a best of Grill Nation.
Welcome back to the Grill Nation show. Appreciate you sticking with us today on 980 AM or on iTunes via podcast or on our website, grillnationshow.com. I'm your host, Jason Grill. I'm joined today by Andrew Miller, who's the president of Guy's Snacks, also the CFO of Spanish Gardens Foods. Also with me today is Andrew Black, who's a treasury manager and in management at BOK Financial and Mo Bank. Guys, we've been talking about all kinds of different things, Spanish Gardens, Guy's now. You just said at the end of that last segment that Guy's potato chips created the first barbecue chip. Is that, tell us about that. That on record.
Yeah, that's
a hell of a sales.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was the first, Guy Caldwell was the first person to put barbecue on.
It makes sense. I mean, we are a barbecue capital and
He started in the factory up there in Liberty, Missouri, is where the factory was. Guys, once upon a time, I mean, it grew to, it was a $100 million company.
Really?
And it's wow. At its peak. And then, again, three sides to every story, right? I mean, it was sold to a company who mismanaged it, sold it, mismanaged.
And now, now you're a president of it, huh?
And now I'm president of it. But in fairness, it's new. New stocks were issued. It's a new company. Same recipe, though. Same name.
So talk to us about how you kind of balance all this out. You know, it's a lot of work, a lot of entrepreneurial vision here. You got a lot of goals, I'm assuming.
Yeah, for sure.
For this year. What's your growth look like? I mean, I know you mentioned a new factory at some point. What are you doing here?
Yeah, I'd love to get a guy's factory up and going. But again, to go cross spectrums here, we could, you know, there's a lot of potential for to make other, you know, snacks. You know, cheese balls, pretzels.
You're all about different verticals, different lines,
yeah,
aren't you?
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Vertical integration.
But you
really
know the barbecue this. Chip will always be the biggest seller.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I assume. Yeah. And that's okay.
Kind of like
that's
Boulevard. Great. You know, the wheat beer still is the number one seller, right. I think. I don't know. Maybe it's not anymore, but for a long time it was. John McDonald was on the show once a few years ago. And he said, we have all these new brands and new flavors, but everyone's the wheat still our number one seller.
Sure.
Now, Tank 7 has grown greatly, but. You know, it's always that one thing that gets you started,
well,
right?
Spanish Gardens Mild. I mean, that's bar none our top seller over there on that side of things. The barbecue dominates our sales. I mean, to be honest. And then, like I said, the tasty mix comes in. And then the rest are pretty even kill. You know, our no salt chip does really well, too, because there's not a lot of competition for that. All about the verticals, man. I would love to a new factory that Andrew is going to pay for.
So we worked that loan out. Yeah. Let's get started on that.
And then from there we can blend other things. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there could be a guy's barbecue sauce, you know, there could be a guy's taco chip, you know, I mean, there's lots of cross marketing too.
That's awesome. So talk to us about some of your, some things you didn't expect along the way that have been kind of hurdles you've had to jump over. In both industries and businesses, you know, it's always good to hear from entrepreneurs to hear not just all about all the successes, but what are some of the things that you didn't expect?
I didn't expect to really have, on the Spanish Garden side, we didn't really have a lot of barriers of entry to new marketplaces. So that was great. On the chip side, we're hitting a little bit. I mean, Frito-Lay is the big guy, right? And, if you go too far east, there's a lot of other guys, regional brands called, you know, obviously not guys, whatever.
Similar
to guys. So there's been that, but really the small bag, honestly, on those chips was more of a headache than I thought it was going to be. And I'm glad it's coming to fruition, obviously, but.
Why is that? Why was it a headache?
Just finding someone to manufacture it for me to put it in the small bags without my own plant right now. To do the small bags, to have that vertical form machine to do the smaller bags. No one was really willing to do it. And that surprised me. Mm. If I owned a machine, I want it running all the time.
The small bags are a big deal.
Apparently. Yeah. Yeah. So, which makes me all the more excited for it. You know?
I do remember the guy's small bags growing up too.
Yeah. We're going to come out with about probably three flavors to start and then just keep rolling them out after that. But on the Spanish Garden side, you know, I've been lucky to have some, you know, my mom's been a great mentor, my aunt as well.
Talk to me about that. Kansas City, you've had a lot of mentors.
Yeah.
A lot of entrepreneurs, business connections, some of your rockers, friends.
Sure.
You continually seem to me just that you're trying to like become a better business owner.
Sure. No, probably a lot of people are going to laugh when I say this, but you know, I like to listen as much as I like to talk.
Yeah, you mentioned that off air.
What's
and
that?
You're in a CEO group and you listen.
Yeah,
more than you add.
Right.
You like to absorb.
Yeah, for sure.
Which
for
is
sure.
a good thing.
No, I love it.
Most people don't do that.
Yeah. I like to be the smartest guy in the room sometimes, but sometimes I like to not be. And that's how you grow, you know, for me. But there's a lot of smart people there. The Kansas City business community is great. I mean, you mentioned like Boulevard, Jack Stack. I mean, there's just a lot of great Kansas City brands and a lot of people that have seen a lot of things I haven't seen, and to get to be able to listen to them talk about it and openly tell me, you know, the don't do that, or that's a good idea, or ooh, you might really want to think about that. You know, it's great. It's great.
They're pretty open, right?
Yeah. They're very giving with their information, which, you know, hopefully one day I can return the favor.
When did the restaurant close for Spanish Gardens?
Oh, man, I'm going to butcher
before,
this.
Before you were there, right?
Yeah, no, well before I was there, 70s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the early mid-70s, pretty much simultaneously with the factory opening.
Okay.
It was, so my grandfather was smart enough to know that he couldn't do both at once. I haven't learned that lesson.
You mentioned a lot of these restaurants in Kansas City, you know, they go the opposite direction. So they have the restaurant, and then they, like, for instance, let's take the roastery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Danny O'Neill will, I would assume most of his profits, he's come on the show, come from his wholesale.
Sure.
And his you know, catering.
Right.
It's in everywhere. You know, I mean, more so than his walking in the door and selling me a black coffee. With a storefront. And it seems to me that the way you're doing it, with kind of more the unsexy route, with the wholesale, with the distributorship, with growing like that, is more, there's better margins. There's better potential than
Sure. You
having a Spanish Gardens restaurant.
Right. And less headache. Right. That being said though, I have been approached, by people in the restaurant business that would gladly, you know, pay a royalty for the name, you know, mm-hmm. and to open a Spanish Gardens restaurant. So I'm not completely ruling that out at all.
As long as you don't have to go in every day.
Right. I'm not the guy you call when you run out of lime. So, you know, as long as I'm clear about that's fine. But I think that's a great, and as long as obviously the food quality has got to be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm not opposed to it. I think it's great, a great marketing tool. Honestly. And as we're talking about expanding, you know, out of Kansas
name,
City,
yeah,
dropping a restaurant in a city, you know, I don't know. You know, I've thought about this.
Yeah, keep all your options open.
Yeah, absolutely. It could go either way. Is it easier to bring the sauce in and then the restaurant, or have people like the restaurant and then bring the sauce in?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
A lot of money is going to be needed for this, Andrew Black. You better start writing some loans here with MoBank, BOK Financial, man. You're going to have all this growth, right?
Oh, yeah.
We got about a minute left, guys. I really appreciate you coming on the show today and talking about these brands. Again, you can find Spanish Gardens online at SpanishGardensFoods.com. They're all over social media as well. I think you guys are really doing a good job with that. Also, Guys Snacks is at GetGuysChips.com. And Andrew, what is the website for the bank? It's just MoBank.com?
MoBank.com or BOKFinancial.com.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate the partnership each and every month. Andrew Miller, it's been great meeting you today. Congrats on all your success, man. I'm hoping that we run into each other again soon. I'm definitely going to go out and get some barbecue guys and some Spanish Gardens Mild here soon.
Absolutely.
And enjoy that, you know, and keep up the good work. And I'm excited to see how you guys are doing, man. It's really cool. So I appreciate Andrew Miller and Andrew Black coming on the Grill Nation show today.
Thanks for having us.
We'll see you next week again on the Grill Nation show. Have a great week, guys. Take care.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.